Mr. Higton, Reel 4. We're talking about your time when you were serving with the 2nd Battalion, Sherwood Foresters, the regulars in France, and they were at Le Mans, and you'd just been told that you were to go to Everil, I think it was, near Paris.
Everaux.
Everaux, near Paris.
Paris, yeah.
And he set off with a hangover, I believe.
Yeah. Eventually, we got to Everaux. It was all day. And the biggest cause of the delay were the refugees on the road.
What state were they in?
Terrible state. The carts without wheels or carts with broken wheels. Because they were moving in the opposite direction to us. As we were going north, they were coming south. And there were miles and miles of stragglers. And they were pitiful to see. And we had plots with kiddies sitting on dogs trailing down, and we even saw donkeys. There'd be the odd man, lady in blankets on the head. And so we were going north.
Had you seen anything of the German Air Force at this point, yourself?
No, not at the moment. We did stories of them, but we've not met them as yet. But as we got towards the end of the day, we're getting up towards Israel. Most of the refugees were south of America. And we did come up again, the Air Force then. And again, it was the same old tale that the groups were too close together.
The group of what?
The group of soldiers were going up country as we were going in the transport. We just got the one trip. There were groups of soldiers going north of us. And they were coming under fire from the Strafe, or the Germans. And we could see signs of carts in the ditches. One or two bodies, not a lot, because most of them removed. And eventually we did get to Everaux. And somebody had learned a little bit of something, because we got bell guns, but they were under the trees. I think the lesson had been learned. Well, we was in bell guns under the trees, and we were dumped there. Rations were dumped in sandbags. We stayed there.
So just the four of you?
The four of us, and we met up with a group who were already there, and we finished up. The group we found then were the first fifth foresters with the territorial unit.
What had you been sent to join them for?
We'd been sent to join them. We didn't find out who was there. We'd been sent to join them to strengthen them, because at that time it was pulling groups together. And it didn't matter which battalion you came from, if you were foresters, you went in that group of foresters. And they were short NCOs. We stayed with them.
Now, had they been in action, the first fifth?
They'd been in action on the front.
And what state were they in as a unit, would you say?
Pretty rattled. I wouldn't say that there was a demoralised, but they were rattled.
How did it show itself?
Uncertainty. Anything. You told them to do anything, they will come in. But, you know, is that right? Yeah. They'd do it in the end, but there was a little bit uncertain. And, I won't say that they were scared, but they were apprehensive, probably is a better word. Anyway, the next day we set off, and believe it or not, we marched back to the mines. All the lot of us. And I would say by this time there'd be collected together probably 120. And we.
So this wasn't the whole of the first fifth, this was just a bit of them?
Just a bit of them.
They got separated from
they
the rest?
Separated, yeah. Because when we went to France, we were short supply, and one battalion there, one battalion there. And after the battalion, one company there. So we were absolutely split. And I think, talking about myself, we were the only two left out of the group of the second. And by this time, we shunted into the first fifth. And we set off and they marched all the way back now to the mines. And it was boiling up. And it was a pretty shocking state. Turning up there.
Just tired.
Tired. We stayed for a meal. And by this time, Dunkirk was in full fog.
Did you know what was happening? I mean,
we knew a little, we didn't know a lot. We knew that the evacuation had started. If you remember now the line of the action in front, anybody that was ever on that side, to the south of what was happening. And the Germans had cut southwest and come across, and we wondered all that. So we stayed at the mines just one night. And then we went to Pornichet on the coast.
Pornichet?
Pornichet. Yeah, yes. And Pornichet was probably like something I can see a Megathorpe. You can see one from the other. And we can see settlers there from where we were. We can see settlers there. We were on the side of Pornichet.
So you still hadn't gone into action. You were basically just there to help officer, yeah. Not officer, be NCOs, this group of men who basically lost their work. You weren't attacked on the way to Pornichet, were you? You didn't get any air attacks on you?
We got air attacks at Pornichet.
Right, well, sorry, we'll come on to that then. Yeah. So you were on the sands?
We was on the sands.
And what orders had you been given, if any?
To stay there until we were called for.
And did you have an officer with you at all, or was it just you and Topper?
Me and Topper, and we had one major, but we didn't see much of him.
And any other NCOs?
I can't remember. There was one Lance Corporal, wasn't there? One Lance Corporal. He came from Buckingham.
So, as far as you remember, a major you never saw hardly.
Never saw
and you and Topper Brown and another Lance Corporal.
Another Lance Corporal.
120 odd men.
About 120 men. Yeah. And that was when I began to realise the shades you could get underneath the tin helmet.
What do you mean?
How small you can make the body underneath the tin helmet. When the bullets and the shrapnel were flying around, because the Jerry Found was on the beach and he didn't have pasters.
What with? Was it strafing or was it bombing?
Strafing.
What would it do? Could you describe what would happen? I mean, no, it's difficult, but.
Yeah, all night, okay. No fires, anything. So nobody probably knew we were there, but at dawn, though, we could see the. Big ships were sent to there. They couldn't come into port, actually. We did nothing more than rowing boat in there. But we could see the big ships laying off land at St. Brazil. And he was on the beach at Pornichet. And so Jerry spotted us, he was after the ships. But when he spotted us on the beach, he was after us too. And we more or less got into the sand holes. And now we were proper scattered. Nobody knew who anybody was. Really.
So there were other troops on the beach, wasn't there?
Other troops had come in, and we were completely scattered. And we moved as well as we could down towards St. Brazil. And there was a, I don't know what you call it, an harbour master. Somebody was organising the evacuation.
Naval beach master, as
well, yes. Master, yeah. And by 11 o'clock, he came out to him on the boat. And out to Lancaster. He was laying, I should probably say, 2 or 3 miles offshore. And we got on Lancaster at 12 o'clock. And the first meal, we had for a long while. I got a fortnight's run from. And I could do with a good bath, but there's no chance of getting home. And the first meal, it was 3:10. We're on commissaries.
What was the situation on board the Lancaster? I mean, can you describe what it was like on board before the German attack? I mean, was it very crowded?
Chaos. Absolute chaos. We got on and was on the top deck. And it was standing room only. We served this food for you down the galley. And there was a queue, snaking queue to go down. We went down and We've got a plate of soup. Well, you know, Billy can do messed in soup. Soup in one tea and then back on the top again. There's nowhere to stay down the road. And there's Arthur Castellet, he's Lance Corporal from Nottingham.
And what unit was he from? Was he from the second fifth?
Yeah.
First fifth.
Yeah. And we stayed on the top. I think it meant to be.
Yeah.
We stayed on the top with a feet over the side. There was all this junkies, I think it was junkies, came over. He dropped one bomb well in front of us. You could see the water spout go up. He came around again, he dropped another one when it was the other side. You could see the water spout go up. He came around a third time, he let one go. We saw it coming down, we don't know where it had gone, but we know now it went down the funnel. And it blew the bottom of the ship out.
Now, had there been any anti-aircraft fire from the Lancaster or any of the destroyers around?
There was fire from the Lancaster. There was one chappy with a Bren. I can go with all the block. He'd got the Bren on the stand.
And you were just sat on the top?
We were sat on the top with feet over the side. And, of course, the boat started to tilt.
How long was that? I mean, did it tilt straight away? Or?
It took about 5 minutes, and then. But the thing, we didn't hear a loud bang, we got this shudder, and then we got the smell of cordite. It's not wicked. And, you know, there's a lot of yelling from underneath. As the boat was going backwards, Arthur said, well, we've got to do something, guys. So, first thing, he took jackets off, boots off. He said, we shot one then. And we sat on the side. And we went down like the other shelter.
So the boat had tilted, you were sat there and the boat had tilted that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like a slide in front of you, yeah, and then yeah, the water.
Then, you know,
where were you in front and back? I mean, bow and stern.
We was at one end, which at the stern end.
The stern end.
Yeah.
So were you aware of the propellers and things?
We were very, very aware of what might be underneath there, but we couldn't see.
You were certain the ship
was... jump off because it was too far to jump.
Because it was like that. Were you, you realised it was sinking?
We knew it was sinking.
Straight away, almost.
And Arthur said, we'd better get away because of the suction. We can't stand a chance.
So what happened when you slid down?
We slid down, and then when we got to the bend, we couldn't see, we didn't know. We knew there'd be something down there, but we didn't know. Whether it would be a boat, whether it would be a propeller, what it would be. Fortunately, there was nothing under there. We went straight into the water. Of course, it's all the eel oil.
And as you slid down, I mean, how rough was it? Had it torn your clothes? Or?
No, we were pretty. We weren't too rivets, but nothing. Nothing too sort there was any damage.
Had you gone fast, or just sort of crawled, almost sort of slid slowly down?
We went slowly down till we got to where
the very bottom. Well, that would be steep then, wouldn't it? At that angle.
So we just went over, just shot over that. And we hit the water feet first. Went down that far, it was dark, and came up gasping. Yeah. And I never saw him again. I don't know what happened to him till I got that book of the First Fifth Foresters, and he got away. He joined video on the First Fifth, because I got sent to Second Fifth. He really on the First Fifth. He went down to Singapore, captured. He was on a boat going to Japan, and the American Navy sank it. So he lost out in the end.
And that was Arthur Cass.
Arthur Castellet.
Castellet.
But when this was written, I didn't know that.
Right. So when you went under, how deep did you? I mean, you don't know exactly. I mean, how?
Too dark.
It was pitch black. You couldn't see anything. You were just wearing. You'd taken your tunic off, so shirt.
I had a shirt and pants.
And no boots.
No boots. No.
And did you? It says you tried to get rid of your uniform because it was dragging you down.
Yeah.
While you were underwater.
Underwater, yeah. Because if you remember, you got the lanyard on with the big pocket knife, and so I had to get that out. I get my belt off, and I got rid of his lights. And when I finally got out, I'd got nothing for him, only diesel oil. Yeah.
When you were coming, I mean, were you running out of air?
I was running out of air, I was gasping when I came
Were you panicking, or was it? How did you feel?
Strangely enough, no. You get these things. You say to yourself, if ever I get out of this, I'll be a changed man. You don't change, but you say so all the time. Strangely enough, I didn't panic.
Did you know where the surface was as you were going up? Could you see where it was?
You could see where it was when it came in. Of course, we got away from the boat as quickly as we could.
Were there a lot of lads in the water around where you were?
Yeah, in one of those, there's a photograph, a mailer mirror, 1940. And if you look at it close, you can see all the heads in the water.
So they were all around you when you came up?
Hundreds, yeah. And
all covered in diesel oil, and you weren't wearing anything, not even your underclothes?
I've got nothing on at all. The only thing I've got my wristwatch, which had stopped at 3:10, and I've got a ring which my mother gave me. And a Frenchman in a rowing boat eventually pulled me out.
How long were you in the water?
I would say between an hour and a half, 2 hours, if memory served me right.
Difficult to tell. What was going on in the water? I mean, were there any boats or rafts near you, or what were the other men in?
Well, I was talking to this chap from Loughborough. When you're in the water, your field of vision is not very, because you're at water level. I could see the boat, I could see it go down. And in the distance, I could just see the tops of boats, but not much else till this chap came in a rowing boat.
Was it choppy then?
Choppy.
So you could just see the next wave?
Yes.
When the ship went out, so you'd gone in, gone deep, the ship wasn't sinking then, but it hadn't sunk.
Because
otherwise it would probably have taken you with it, I presume.
Yes, but that's where you're getting away. That's where you want to get away.
So you went down, came up, and then swam. Could you swim, or was it?
Swim, yeah. Doggy paddle swim, and be coming back, and be coming side.
Just to get away?
Just get away.
And then how long after you got away from it, was it before it sank?
It took about 30 minutes, I think it tells you what it was.
So you'd get well, you'd be well clear by then?
Well clear.
So there's no chance of being sucked under then? And were there any people in the water, the people in the water, was it just soldiers or were there civilians about as well?
There were civilians on the Lancaster, and I never met any in the water, particularly soldiers, sailors in the water.
Just round you, and not much of a field of vision, so you wouldn't be able to see men. Were there any in your field of vision, or was it like being on your own almost?
It was like being on my own, yes, it was, yeah.
It wasn't like being in a big crowd then?
No, I spoke to one chappy, and he was, this is all you're right, so he said, I'm okay. And he was saying, stick it out, just take it easy, don't panic. And then off he went, he was doing a crawl stroke, and off he went. But no, I was doing more of a dog paddle and a backstroke, anything to conserve strength.
You'd learnt to swim then? You were all right in there. What about, you've got nothing on, but on the other end, the sea's not that warm at any time of the year, is it? Were you cold?
It was, if you remember, 1940, it was a very warm spring, fortunately.
So you were all right?
I was all right, yeah.
It wasn't too cold?
Not too cold, no.
Now, what about the question of the... Was it just one German aircraft that you saw?
I saw, there were two or three about, but I only saw the one who was doing the damage.
The three passes, the third of which sunk it. Did any of them machine gun you in the water?
There was one coming down machine gun in the
was
water.
Was that the same one that sank you, or was it? Or no, wouldn't
I
you know?
No, I wouldn't know that. I know they were coming down machine gunning. And the same as one of you have said since, they were trying to ignite me. Oil on the water, which it would have put bait to all of us if they managed to do that.
Mm. You think that's what they were trying to do?
I think that's what they were trying to do, yeah.
And were they machine gunning near you, or was it because it's a big area around the ship?
Yes. Fortunately, I didn't know.
So it wasn't near you, and they didn't set fire to it?
They didn't set fire to it, no.
You were still fairly calm. What were other people like? Because not everybody's calm in the water.
No, there were one or two you could hear yelling, but there was a lot of debris in the water. So mostly somebody got something to hold on to.
So the ones that went in the water, they weren't sort of drowning all around you. It was the ones that were inside the ship.
Yes.
The ones on the lower decks.
Fortunately, we were on top. Had we been underneath, we probably wouldn't have stood a chance.
So if it'd come while you were getting your food?
Yeah.
It was so crowded, it would have been difficult to get out.
Yeah.
And was there any question of there being enough life rafts and things? The ship was very overcrowded, by military necessity.
I've had reports since that apparently the captain had been ordered to leave here about 10:30 in the morning, and he wouldn't. He said, "I'm not going while we get another soldier on board. Keep bringing him in.
So it had backfired on him a bit, but it wasn't. We're not here to criticise people. Now, what was it like with the oil? I mean, how much oil was there in the water, in the area, you know, in your little patch? Was there a lot of oil?
It was completely covered, yeah, completely covered.
What was that like? Was it all over your face?
Face and head and,
Did it stop you breathing? I mean, was it...
No, you can smell it. Taste it, you still have to keep your mouth shut.
Was it like thinned oil, or was it that thick black stuff?
Thick black stuff, diesel.
Now, so... Anything else happen while you're back? Anything up from an hour and a half to 2 hours? You don't really know.
No,
you're not saying anything about that. It's just a guess. Yeah. So, but it seemed like an hour and a half to 2 hours to you. What did anything happen during that time? I mean, was there anything, you know, or was it just enduring? Did you get something to hang on to?
I had a little bit. It was only not much bigger than that, but at least.
Just a couple of foot square piece of wood.
It's comfortable than anything. I saw one or two. Of course, the kickback's in water. So if you start, you get a full kickback, it'll float until it gets waterlogged. And there's one or two hanging on to kickbacks.
Were there many bodies in the water?
I'm sorry, any.
Not something you had to deal with. Was anybody? Were people helping each other? Or?
Yes, we could see that. You know, more or less jollying them along more than physically.
Like helped. You had with the bloke you met.
Yeah.
He'd given you a bit of advice and. Now, so anything else before you were picked up?
No, I'd say that it was a Frenchman in a rowboat.
Before he arrived, were you trying to go? It sounds daft, but were you trying to go anywhere? I mean, you.
We could see. We didn't go back to shore because by this time the jelly would be there in any case. We saw one or two boats here, and we was heading for the nearest boat we could see.
And that's what generally everybody was doing.
That's what everybody was doing.
But you don't know how many there was because you couldn't see much.
Couldn't see, no.
So, this when the boat did appear, did you see him coming?
When he got pretty close. When he got pretty close, and he shouted to him, and he changed direction and came towards me. And of course, he had a job to get me in, because every time he pulled me, I got oil and I was slipping back. And there was one more man in the boat who he picked up, and he helped him, and he got me in.
So you were a bit weak, I presume. You couldn't climb.
I couldn't climb. No, they pulled me in.
How big a boat was it? I mean, what we're talking is.
Maybe time we'd done, we got 10 of us. Maybe about 10 of us in the boat. Only a small fishing boat, seaside boat. And then he made us, and there's a photo of one of the boats he took us to in there. And the photo you see people wandering about and got a stitch up.
And so there were 10 of you?
10 of us, yeah.
And did you have, when you got on board, did the cold hit, or was it still hot enough to keep you?
It's still hot enough to keep us.
It wasn't too bad. Did he have blankets or anything for you?
I had a sack bag. I landed in England with that man.
And he picked you up, he looked around for the others. Did that take long while he were picking others?
He left there, it would probably be 6 o'clock at night, and he picked up all he could pick up.
So about another hour after you were picked up, you know.
And then took him 28 hours to get to Falmouth.
Where'd he come from? I mean, France, but
I don't know where he come from, no. I don't know where he come from.
He was deliberately going to rescue, though.
Going to
That's rescue. What he'd done.
That's what he'd done.
You don't know his name?
No. I'd say there's some pictures there, but I don't know what the name of the boat was.
And what state were you all in, the eight or nine of you in the bottom of the boat?
Pretty exhausted. None of us were wounded, fortunately. We were all fit. but we were exhausted. And then it took him 28 hours. He came non-stop to Falmouth.
So, and all you had was a
sack bag. Had a sack bag. And,
and you were just sitting in the... Did you have a seat?
Anywhere we could get.
Were you at the seat or at the bottom of the boat?
We were sitting on the bottom of the boat. And they wouldn't let us land.
Anything happen on the journey? I mean, did you see any German aircraft or ships or any British ships?
We were fortunate that we didn't meet anybody or no opposition going back.
Was Falmouth the nearest point? I'm not too good at geography. Is that
Falmouth was one of the nearest points.
So he'd gone the quickest way he could.
And they wouldn't let us land until it got dark.
Did you have any food or drink en route?
We had a couple of biscuits. That's all we got. And got to Falmouth, they said, sorry, when it gets dark, then we'll take you off. And the buses came in.
Yeah, hang on. During the last, when it at night, because you go through a full night. I mean, it does get even in winter. Summer it gets cold. In spring,
it gets cold.
Do you huddle up together? Or
we huddle up together. That's what you call, yeah.
And how bad were you by the time you got to Falmouth?
We was hungry more than anything. Fiercely hungry, and in 2 words, we were fed up, browned off.
Yeah. And why wouldn't they let you ashore during the day? Were they frightened of another raid or?
No, they didn't want the populace to know that we were demoralised. Churchill wouldn't release the information about the Manchester until about a fortnight later. Things were going bad for England, and it was all an exercise in morality.
Now, what's this about a trawler, the Derbyshire?
The Derbyshire.
What was that bit? Was that? When did you get on that? Sorry, I've got a bit confused there.
That was one of the boats that was standing by and picked us all up.
But not you?
I think I came on the Derbyshire.
So the French were... Sorry.
And took us to the Derbyshire.
Gotcha. Right. Yeah. So you weren't on board the French ship for long?
No.
About how long?
About half an hour.
So he took you to...
The big ones, yeah.
And so that was the ten of you. And how many would there be on the Derbyshire?
I don't know. It was solid. The standing room only.
And that's where you got the biscuit.
That's
and
where we got the biscuits.
And the thing.
The sack, yeah.
So, when they've got buses ashore ready for you.
Ashore, and they took us to. It's all right. It's all right. Probably not waiting, wanting to get in. They took us to Crown Hill Barracks in Plymouth.
And you're still only wearing this sack?
Yeah. And then they kicked it out from there.